Hi, welcome back to Tech Days Online, Cloud Edition. And on the cloudy cathartic couch with me right now, I've got fellow MVP Richard Fennell, fellow Black Marbler, and we're going to spend the next 45 satisfying minutes in your company talking about Dev Test Labs. Richard, over to you.
Yeah, so really pleased to be here at Tech Days Online. And today we're going to be having a look at Dev Test Labs, which is, I think, an undiscovered feature for many people in Azure. The key aim for it is to provide an easy mechanism for people to provide, as the name implies, dev test labs on the Azure platform. Initially, I think the vision for the product was to provide an easy means for developers to provision out single VMs, but as the product's grown and been enhanced, and as you hope you'll see going through here, it gives us a nice way to manage our cost resources in Azure, control who can get to VMs, and to a degree hide people from the complexities that are present in managing Azure VMs these days.
I think it's fair to say that it's a fairly young product, isn't it? I mean, we've been on previews and watching it grow over the year, but I've been quite pleased. I mean, we're now in a position where it's really quite mature and it offers quite a lot of features. So hopefully you'll walk us through some of those.
Yeah, so easiest way for this, I'm sure you've seen a few slides and a few videos over Tech Days thus far, so I thought we'd just try and go completely demo.
What's the worst that could happen?
Yeah. So, I just go and select my dev test labs. I've actually got a couple here already set up, but I'm going to create a brand new one for us today. So, you start with your Azure subscription, you come in, and you can create a dev test lab. And there is no cost associated with a dev test lab. Inside that lab, there will be VMs. And you will pay for the usage of the VMs that you choose to spin up. When they're running, you're charged. When they're stopped, you don't.
So are you thinking this is more of a development team kind of service than a single developer? Or can we all get use from it?
We can all get use from it. So this talks very much to the question as to how you're going to structure your use of MSDN and Azure inside Azure, usage inside Azure. Because obviously anybody who's got an MSDN subscription, they have some Azure benefits, and there's nothing stopping you coming along and creating a couple of labs. I've got a couple of Azure subscriptions you can see here, and I've created a lab for each one. I could create many labs for each one if I wanted to, if I wanted to segment my work up in that way. But if you've bought a dev test Azure subscription for your team, as opposed to a separate MSDN one that you get because of your benefits, that would probably be the primary case for it. It gives you a way to say, well, I've bought this dev test resource and I'm going to subdivide and manage its use in this manner.
Okay.
So I'll go in and create a brand new dev test lab. And we wait, and there we are. And all I actually have to do is give it a name. So I'll just call it Tech Days.
Oh, okay. Now, so that says auto shutdown. That sounds
That
sounds quite interesting. Is that a save me from myself? It'll turn my VMs off for me?
Yes. The default mode for Dev Test Labs is that your VMs will get shut down based on a schedule. Now, you can overrule that, and there's other policies, but this is your initial heads up. This is my limitation. So I get to choose which is your subscription I'm going to associate it with. I get to choose where I'm going to place it in the world. So a dev test lab lives in an Azure data center.
Right.
So if I had a reason to test things in Europe and a reason to test them in America, I would need two dev test labs.
So any VM I provision inside that dev test lab gets provisioned to the same region as the parent
because
lab.
It's going to create a resource group
right
behind the scenes.
And I presume that's why it's talking about storage type then, because that's where it's going to put the VHD.
Yes, so I'm choosing whether I'm going to see standard VMs or the premium VMs.
Ultra fast.
I can choose if I pin it to my board. So if I hit create, it goes off and creates reasonably sharply.
It's nice to see they've changed the default from on for pin to board to off, because my dashboard used to just get scattered with tiles, and it just my OCD starts to hurt at that point.
Well, while we're waiting for that, I'll just click into one that I've already created, and I can just talk about some of those policies and settings.
Okay.
So if we come down and look at the configuration, the policy settings, and this is the standard stuff that you get for any dev test lab, is that first, inside this lab, you can choose which size of VMs are allowed. Now, by default, everything's allowed. You can have whatever you want. But if you want to limit your developers to only being able to run on standard A-series boxes, you switch on and you just start ticking the box for the ones you want.
So that implies that I can provision this as say, an owner of the subscription, give my developers access to the lab, but not the rights to change the policies,
yes,
yeah?
Yes, exactly. Okay. So it's a way of giving them enough rope to not hang themselves. Or enough rope to not bankrupt you.
Yeah.
Is probably
nearer
the point.
I think that's the important thing, isn't it?
I can also lock it down and say, well, how many VMs can any given user in this lab spin up? And obviously, if you've backed your Azure subscription against your Azure Active Directory, it's not like they can go and create more live IDs and quickly create more accounts.
Of course,
they've got
yep.
one account, they're locked down. So that can be quite useful. Though that does point us towards one of the limitations here. This is very VM focused. So we tend to work in single VMs, which if you're doing complex development where I need a domain controller and a SQL box and this, that, and the other, there's some issues there. And we'll come back to those and what we can do about that later.
Okay.
I can also limit the... I have not saved my settings, that is correct. I can also choose to limit the maximum number of labs that this team, this whole group of people can have.
Okay.
And then, coming to the one that you noticed earlier, we have the auto shutdown. So in auto shutdown, the default is that the machine shut down at 7 p.m. based on the time zone, in my case, Europe.
Okay.
And do I send a warning? And if I send a warning, you know, I can have a webhook so I can get a message and all of those sorts of things.
That's quite nice.
That's quite nice. And I'll be honest, the reason I've got two dev test labs in here is I do a lot of demonstrations of VSTS and automated build systems and stuff like that. And I'm always spinning up VMs. And I used to just do it in the portal. And then I left them running. And then found I'd used all my MSDN subscription because I'd rushed off to catch the train to go home or something, forgot to switch it off, didn't go back in, all my credit's gone. I now tend to create all my demo VMs inside here, so they get shut off
eventually,
by default.
Yeah.
You know, they'll last a day at most.
So it's interesting that you mentioned build servers there. One of the topics of discussion on the MVP mailing list for Azure the other week was using dev test labs to hold our build servers. Mm. And we could then turn them on in the morning and turn them off in the evening and get some good tracking of the costs of that.
Yeah, and it's something I've always liked with build devices is that you script their install, and there's tooling inside dev test lab that help with the scripting of the install as well.
Okay.
You can also do an auto start. So if you want your machine switched on during office hours, that becomes an option. Though you notice here that this defaults to off. So machines don't automatically switch on.
I don't know if there's good days of the week there, so I don't have to turn it on Saturday or Sunday.
And of course, okay. You can still overrule that. So if I am working late, I can go in and restart the machine if I want to. Or I can choose not to switch it on if I don't want to.
Right.
Excuse me. So next, we also have some configuration in here as to which virtual machine images I want to start with as my base image, because this is all based around ARM templates, Azure Resource Management templates.
Okay, so I can stop the devs using a really, really expensive SQL Enterprise image and lock them down to a SQL Dev Edition.
Or if you were only doing BizTalk development, I could set it so you could only see the offerings of BizTalk images.
That's quite
if
nice.
That was appropriate. And then you would maybe call this my BizTalk Dev Test Lab.
Right.
So I've got control over the images that I allow you to see. As you can see, full extent, it's the full list of marketplace images. Now, if those images don't meet your requirements, you can also upload your own custom images.
Okay. And that's just like creating a custom VM, I presume. We upload the VHD file, it drops it in the storage for the lab, and the lab will then use that if I want to provision a new virtual machine.
Yeah, and I'm just, now my Tech Days one has been created, I'm just going to hop over to that one so I actually do my demo in there. So yes, we were looking at, we have marketplace images, we have custom images, and interestingly, we have this concept called formulas. I'll come back to that in a moment.
Okay.
Because I missed a couple up at the top. So, properties just gives us our subscription IDs. There's nothing interesting there. I said a resource group got created for this. The resource group was created and into it placed a virtual network. So that is your default thing. So any machine that you create will be dropped onto that virtual network.
Right, okay.
So you have a relatively simplistic model of security.
So they'll all talk to each other, but if I do something crazy like make them all a domain controller with the same domain names, I might have some problems. So yes. I'm just going to think through what I'm building on there.
But, and this is a more recent change, I'm not convinced it's a completely recent change, but it's certainly surfaced in this portal in a way that's far more configurable, is that I can come in here and add more virtual networks.
Okay.
So I can have multiple virtual networks in here. I could go into this lab and inside this resource group, provision a router between those networks, firewalls, domain controls, whatever I want. Right. So I can build complex environments if I want to, but there's a bit of work to be done. I can't give it one Azure resource management template that provisions everything from scratch.
Right.
So I do have that option there, and I have all my normal options in here. It's a virtual network, so I get all of the normal controls that I would have on it. The key one, probably for most cases, being the case, give a public IP address. Now, if you wanted to be provisioning machines out into your lab and they weren't available to the internet, you would have a requirement, and it would be outside the lab, to come in and link this virtual network back via a site-to-site VPN
right.
or whatever.
So we can connect securely without going via the internet.
Yeah.
Okay.
But the default is, I'm going to spin up VMs. They're connected to a virtual network that gives access to the World Wide Web.
Right. Which
is exactly the same as going in over here and clicking Add New VM.
Okay.
So if I just hop back, and then we get to arguably the most interesting bit. And that is, we have this concept of a artifact repository. So you want to spin up a machine, mm-hmm. and you might want to install things onto it. You might want to put 7-zip on, or Notepad++, or whatever, a whole range of utility tools, or things like Visual Studio, or whatever, and equivalents if you're spinning up Linux machines, because this isn't limited to Windows, it's anything that can be spun up on Azure.
All right.
And what you can end up with is an artifact repository that contains all of these items. So you can pick and put them onto any given machine. Now, by default, there's one artifact repository, the public one, which has all the stuff Microsoft provide.
Okay, so that's not yours. Microsoft provide a set of helpful stuff to get you started in building
and
the VMs.
And it might be easier now, at this point, now I've got a machine set up, that I can come back and I'll actually show you how to use it. So what I can do is, I can come in and I can either see just my machines or the machines for everybody. I'm going to create a new virtual machine, and it comes up and asks me what base I wish to use. So let's say I would like to create a Windows server. Let's keep it simple. So I'm going to create a Windows server. And then this experience is exactly the same as the experience I'd have if I was creating any machine in Azure. So
except I presume that where you've got virtual machine size there, that will be restricted to the ones
you
turned on in your policies. And I'm guessing it's not asking about location and storage account because it picked that up from the lab.
Yep.
Okay. Oh, and I see, yeah, subnet, it's automatically filled in your...
Yeah, and I won't get any choice.
Yeah.
You know, I can't pick any other one up.
Okay.
So I've given it a username. Now, I do, in the lab has a concept of a secret store, and this is just a key value pair store.
Right.
So if I needed something like a domain password, say I was dropping this machine into some more complex pre-configured thing, or there was some certificate or code I needed to inject into my process, I can place that as a value in my secret store and just say, go and get the default password.
So as the IT guy, I can create that secret without telling you, the dev.
Yep.
You can use that knowing the name of the secret, but still you don't know what the secret is.
Exactly.
Okay.
No, I'm not actually going to use that this time. I'm just going to give it a password. And the secret store is specific to the dev test lab.
Right.
Don't worry. So I've given it valid username, password, it's happy with the name. I can now choose the size of machine I want, and as we said, that's limited to the choices I gave it.
Which I don't think you did in this lab, did you?
No, I've just said I can see everything, so an A0 will do. I scroll down a bit. It then says, do I want a public IP address or not? Now, obviously, without a public IP address, you need some means of connecting to that machine to remote desktops. That would sort of assume you're probably going to be in a hybrid cloud environment.
Okay.
And then I get to the point of artifacts.
Oh, okay, so when you provision the virtual machine, you can basically say, oh, and also while you're at it, install all of this lot and yeah. I'll go and have a coffee.
And the ones that are listed in here, if you notice, are all things that are conceivable that you might want to put on a Windows PC.
Yeah.
Because it knows I'm putting on a Windows PC.
And I see they're all published by Microsoft.
Yes.
Right.
So I'm going to add 7-Zip on here. And I could add as many as I want. And actually, what it's done is it's created an ARM template for me. So I can actually see the ARM template that's going to actually do the work. So in effect, DevTest Labs is a wrapper, a UI over creating relatively complex ARM templates.
Okay, and I presume that I could grab that template as well and store it somewhere and maybe even use it as an artifact.
And a good callback for something we'll be looking at in a few moments.
Fantastic. And you've completely lost your train of thought.
Lost my train of thought when you're doing that. So we've got our ARM template. Now, and I think this talks back to sort of the genesis of where this product's come from. In the old Azure portal, creating a VM was literally sort of basically server name, click and go, and you didn't get a lot more choice. But now, there is a lot of choice. There's a lot of control on this complexity.
Yeah.
And this is something that many of the devs and testers won't be familiar with. And if they've got to start learning ARM templates to move forwards, that can be quite a barrier to adoption.
Yep.
But they've got their MSDN benefits, they've got these things they could be using. You want a quick way of doing it. We don't really want them going creating classic style VMs, but equally we don't want them going in and just creating VMs in the Azure portal and hitting next, next, next. Because anybody who's used Azure in the new portal at that point means you end up with lots of resource groups and networks and you don't know what's what and all the names look like GUIDs. And it's an absolute nightmare working out what you've got. And then you don't delete any of it because you're not quite certain how it's all wired together. This forces you down a neat route. And I think that's one of the big benefits for me. It means I know anything I put in this lab is going to end up in this resource group, bolted to these networks. If I delete the lab, I will get rid of all of it.
So are you thinking that we do a lab per team, or would you do a lab per project if you were that way inclined? Or is it a lab per person? Or is it whatever you want to do?
Yeah, I think all are equally viable. It depends how your team operates. I think probably the labs per person is probably the least likely.
Right.
Probably have lab per team, but they maybe constrain how much each person in a team is allowed to consume. Because arguably one of the key aims here is to control billing. The last thing you want is somebody spinning up 5 boxes that all cost a couple hundred quid a month, and 6 months down the line when they haven't been switched up, you suddenly realise you've used all your Azure spend.
So that the guide might actually be, when you start looking at your repositories then, I presume, if we're going to put our own artifacts in there, you probably don't want artifacts from 2 different projects available, because you might end up polluting the streams, as it were, that I provision a virtual machine for one team working on one project and accidentally drop an artifact from another one on there.
Yes, yeah, that would seem a very reasonable one. That would probably be the best place to start. You know, start with the assumption a lab per team until that idea falls apart on you.
Yep.
You know, I quite like this way, pick the simple, no traction, no blockage route until it causes you an issue.
Yeah, okay.
So that's creating away, and this VM will take, 5-10 minutes. It takes as long as Azure labs take to create.
Yep.
But I made some choices there, didn't I? I said, I want a lab, and I made these choices, and I mostly picked the defaults, I'll be honest, but I could have picked any options. At no point my hand was forced, I was given a free choice. I have another option, and that is formulas, which I sort of leaped over. So what I can do with a formula is say, right, I know this is how I want machines to look in this lab.
Okay.
So I know I can create a VM and I can answer questions.
Yeah.
And I'm picking up a standard, probably Microsoft-based image, but it could be my own. It's probably a Microsoft one. I can hit add on a formula. And I can do the same sort of things. So this time, let's pick a Linux-based image. So I say, this is going to have to be a CentOS box, and I'll call this I'll call my formula name CentOS 1. I can give it a description. It's locked the image type because I've just selected it.
Right.
I could choose to give it a username if I wanted to. I could choose to give it a password.
Interestingly, they're not mandatory, which implies you can leave them blank and then the dev maybe can fill in them later.
Well, okay. I could force so I always know what the admin passwords on my test Linux boxes are. I can then change the machine size. So let's say I don't want an A0. I want something a bit more chunky for this job. So let's say I want that one.
That's certainly chunky. That'll burn through your credit.
Yeah, it will. Now how much? Oh yeah, 250 quid a month. That one, we'll select that one. Again, I have no choice over my virtual network and my subnets.
Because you've only got the one in the lab.
Yeah. Okay. I'm not going to say don't give it a public IP address because I wouldn't be able to talk to it.
Yep.
But this does talk to the point here, if I had multiple network labs, virtual networks in there for some complex setting, I could select the exact settings were just right to drop it in the right place in the complex network. Because as we all know, many developers don't understand IP subnetting at all.
And the penny's just dropped to this. This is one way that it might help me at the moment build my complex environments, because you could have a formula for a domain controller and a formula for a server that then joins the domain.
Or equally, you may only provide a formula for the bit you want to change in the network, because my SQL box is standard, my domain controller is standard. I could provision those out without a formula. But then I could then say, but this is the one people are going to keep redeploying, so I do a formula for that one, and it has the right settings to match.
Okay.
And there the secret store starts to work.
Yeah, because then it can join the domain, and you don't have to tell the dev
so
the domain.
So here you can see my artifact list is different, because I picked a Linux box.
Okay.
So let's say I need Docker on here.
Yeah. Any minute now, that's going to change to say one artifact selected.
Yeah. Unless I didn't select it, which I think is the more likely. What did I say? Docker. Yeah, I didn't hit add over there. And then hit OK. There we are. And now I can create this.
So that's not going to create the VM, is it? It's just going to drop the formula into
It's creating
your
a formula.
Right. OK.
Which should appear pretty quickly.
Any moment now.
Yeah.
Talk amongst yourselves.
Yes. So what we can do now is, I'll bet it is really there. There it is, it got there. So now when I go into my virtual machines, I have an extra option. So I can create a new virtual machine, and at the top of the list, when it arrives, is my formula.
Ooh.
So I now hit my formula, and all of my things are pre-configured.
Okay.
You know, I still have the option to change, but at least they're sort of about right.
Yeah.
They should be about right. And I only have to enter the things that are missing, which in this case would be a virtual machine name, a server name, a username, and a password.
So if you go down to artifacts, one selected, can you actually remove the selected artifact as well? As obviously, you can add more.
Well, there's a question. I've never tried that. Why would I want to do that? I could add it again.
Because personally, I think that's probably a good thing. I'm saving you from yourself. You've got a set of baseline bits, if you like, that I want you to have, and then you can throw more in.
But what if I just fill in the mandatory fields with any old rubbish for now? If I go down to the bottom again, what
I was going to say, that's going to fail. That's not a long enough password by quite a shot.
I'll have to put something in a halfway decent password for it to accept that. As soon as I've filled it all in, it lights up the ARM template again. And I've got that option. So I always have that option. I can take that ARM template and provision it out in another manner, which is quite a relevant thing to the next thing we'll be looking at.
Okay.
So that's an ARM template with the various items parameterized, like it's looking for the secure string for things. And there, I could obviously edit this in my text editor of choice and remove any artifacts I'm calling.
And
to.
Interestingly enough, we've got outputs on there. So I mean, as an ARM guy, actually, I'm looking at that thinking, well, that's pretty good, actually, because I've got sensible parameters. It's going to deploy a bunch of resources. And I presume tell me key things that it's actually then deployed, like, you know, what's the IP address and what's its name. Okay.
Yes, if we look down there, got some IDs. So what could I do with that?
I don't know. What could you do with that?
What could I do with that? Well, there are many things you could do with an ARM template, many ways of using it. But the one I'm going to focus on is the one that's sort of dev testy.
Okay.
So if we quickly hop over to VSTS, I'm sure you're all fully aware of VSTS and all the wonders and great things in there for work tracking and source code management, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We have a build and release system in there.
Okay.
Now, build and release has custom tasks. And if we look down in the deploy area, I have added some Azure Dev Test Lab tasks. Now, obviously, it's an ARM template. There were already in there things for deploying to Azure with an ARM template. So I could just have used those. So I could have used the standard stuff. So here's an ARM template, put it somewhere away. But that's not really using Dev Test Labs in any meaningful sense.
Right.
So out the box, at the moment, there isn't any, can you say out the box with the cloud and VSTS?
It's
so rapidly
box.
Moving. There's a question for Twitter.
I can certainly spot some fairly useful ones.
Yes.
There. So we can create a new VM image, which I assume is basically creating the virtual hard disk and storing it.
Yes.
And I presume that you might want to, you've got your Create Dev Test Labs VM there. Is that because you're gonna want to deploy bits to it?
So if you browse the marketplace, I will quickly leap over to one so we don't have load delays. There's a standard task in here called the Azure Dev Test Lab Tasks. And this has, as you said, three functions: create a custom image, create a VM, delete a VM. So that what that's going to do, it's going to exercise an ARM template. It's going to use an ARM, basically they use ARM templates in the lab that you define. So to avoid us having to watch me type for too long, I've already added the create VM option.
Okay.
I have told it which Azure subscription I intend to use, and that Azure subscription has been entered as a centralized service endpoint inside VSTS.
So again, as the admin, I can store the credentials to that, so you as the dev.
So as you can see here, I have stored my account in two ways. It's a thing that I've noticed quite a bit with VSTS tasks when they're talking to Azure. Some of them were written to talk to the classic interface, and some of them to the resource manager style way of working. I tend to register my Azure subscriptions twice
just
put classic in brackets, because otherwise, if you don't put classic, any of the ones that support either mechanism show you them both together and you don't know which one you've got. Now, you can also security trim in here. So if we look at an endpoint, I can say who's got rights to use them.
Right, so just like I can secure the lab, I can secure who's got access to the Azure subscription holdings lab.
So who's allowed to use any given bit.
Right.
And then so I can see that in there. The only one that pops up is the non-classic one, because this is an RM thing.
Yep.
It knows what type to use. And actually, if we look on the endpoints, when you add them, you see there's two different types.
Yep.
You have to register, and you register them in slightly different ways. But they're broadly get a certificate, chuck it in. Sort of thing. Then I can choose the lab I wish to deploy to. I haven't refreshed this page since I've created the other one, so that's the only lab it can see.
All right. Yep.
And then what I've done is, it's going to get this template from somewhere. So it's going to get this template from an artifact known to this release management system.
So that's looking inside your source control. That's your Git repo within VSTS?
No, not quite. If I'd used this task inside a build, yes, it could be looking into those areas. But this is normally something I would consider part of release management.
Right.
I would build my products, then I would wish to deploy them somewhere.
Okay.
Provisioning the environment is part of the release process.
Right.
So what I've actually got, if we look in our builds, is I have a basic little build definition that goes and just picks up the template, and that's a file just stored inside source control. So either the file can be stored in source control, or I can pass it through a build, so it's version controlled, into an artifact, and I can pick it up either way. So the key is here, in this case, because it's part of a build, this one's being picked up because we're looking in a repository. If I was using this inside a release pipeline, it'd be looking in a build artifact. But effectively, it's a folder that the build or the release understands.
Right.
But that file is just
one of those template files that you've got.
It's literally
that.
That.
Right.
Cut and paste. don't do anything else.
Yep.
Now, if I wanted to modify that, I could. I don't have to.
Okay. So I infer from that then that that VSTS add-in doesn't know about the formula. Is that right? Which is that why you've used the
yes.
template? Okay.
So I use the template of the formula.
Gotcha.
And then I can pass in any parameters that I need to do to meet the requirements. That's broadly VM name. And then I would then store those as variables in here. So I can have the name of my labs.
Okay.
And I can have my username and the secured password stored in here.
So are you thinking that the application for this is sort of CI, where we're trying to do a build, we're provisioning virtual machines that we then put our bits onto, do some tests and maybe throw it away, and it's all within the confines
yes.
of that dev test lab?
Yes,
okay.
Exactly. So it's very much that integration testing. Now, as I say, I've wired it into a build here, which is probably the wrong place. I think in most circumstances, I would prefer to see you building the code. Build your, whatever your deployable is, put it in a known location, and that build being, and running any unit tests, then that build being successful, then automatically triggering
a release,
which provisions out the dev test environment and runs the integration tests. And if all the integration tests pass, throw away the environment because I don't need it anymore. But because we're doing it into dev test labs, it's going in neat and tidy,
yep.
and it will auto shut off as well.
Okay.
So if I do forget to shut it off, or I've left it, because quite a good one is if the integration tests all fail, I'd like to leave it there because I'd like a human to go and have a look to see why, to investigate the logs and do whatever.
So looping back then all the way to we were looking at the artifact repository in the lab.
Yeah.
Can that does that artifact repository point at your VSTS artifact repository, as in you've done a build and you drop the bits for your product into that repository so people can then use it in their own labs as
yeah.
As an artifact and a formula?
So if we went back to, where are we with there? No, it's virtual machines. If we go back to configuration, and I look at artifact repositories, I could add my own private artifact repository.
Okay.
And all it is, as you can see here, is a Git repo. So that Git repo can be anywhere. It can be inside VSTS, it can be GitHub, it can be anything you've got, but it's a Git repo. So that what that means is, if I wanted to follow the model where I build something and then to deploy it, maybe the output of my build is to push into that Git repo
right,
my JSON file,
version of that available.
Whatever.
Yeah, okay.
And so that gives me the latest version of the artifact. So the example yeah. is, say you're writing a desktop product that you wish to install, a word processor, let's say. You could build that product, package it up, and you make sure the package arrives into the Git repo, suitably packaged to be an artifact. And then you could then have that artifact, the latest version of that artifact, being picked up by your formula. And that would give a mechanism, say you were just doing it manually, tester comes in on the morning and goes, oh, I need a new test VM to test the overnight build. And they just go, oh, latest overnight word processor build. And it goes, okay, I spin you up a Windows 10 box and I pull down the latest version of the Richard's wonderful word processor artifact.
Right.
And it's done, and while I'm making my coffee, that machine should be provisioned. You know, rule of thumb I always reckon, about 10 minutes for a VM. And so, you know, you've got time to sort that. So at that point, you go, well, how do I create an artifact?
How do I create
an artifact?
So it's as if you're putting words in my mouth.
Yes. So we had a look at the public artifacts. So we saw WinZip and all
yep.
sorts of things. Well, in the new Microsoft style, all of that's up on GitHub.
Okay.
So if we actually come up and have a look, if you just go and have a look for the Dev Test Labs tree, we can see all of the... Oh, I've gone too far back there.
So you've gone back a step. That's the main Azure repo.
Yeah. There we are. We
all
can
right.
see all of the templates. And we've got some ARM templates in there. Then we've got some artifacts. So if we go and have a look at, let's have a look at, which one was I on?
So as a start of a 10, then, I could simply clone that repo down onto my machine, and I've got a whole wealth of resources that I can use to start building and learning.
If you wanted to install these in some way differently, you could. But if, say, I wanted to install Chrome on the box, they all follow a very similar pattern.
All right.
So We have an artifact file. So if you were creating your own artifact in your Git repo, in a folder in your Git repo, you need to have an artifact file.
And that's which gives very a basic of an ARM template, isn't it, looking at that?
Yeah, well, okay. It's broadly, what is it, where is it, what can it be run on, and what command do I do to install it?
Yes, that looks hauntingly like the custom script extension, JSON, if you're building ARM templates
because
from scratch,
that's what
which
they
is
are.
Nice to see.
Yeah, okay. Which is what they're going to, inside the ARM template, that's what they are. It's a subset of a bit of an ARM template pulled out.
Yeah. Drop these files on my machine, now run this thing to actually do the work.
And then, the other things in the package are the PowerShell script, in this case, that you're going to run, because it's a Windows one.
Yep.
And anything else. Now, an awful lot of these, when you look through them, especially on the Windows platforms, use Chocolaty to install them. So they're leveraging the new Git-based technology of installation that is Chocolaty. Right. So they're not storing a zip or an MSI or a whatever. But if your command thing has some other weird and wonderful way of doing it, as long as you can express it in that PowerShell script and arguably put the MSI in there with it, or you have your own private NuGet repository or whatever, you just need a mechanism. The artifact needs to say, here's a manifest that tells me how to run a command line that will install this.
Right.
And you do have the option of exposing parameters.
So in your example we were talking about earlier, your build would go off and build my word processor and package the MSI, and your extension there would have a little PowerShell script and the MSI listed in that artifact JSON, drop them both on the machine, execute the PowerShell, and the PowerShell basically does install package or whatever it is to execute the MSI.
Especially in corporate environment things, it's a good idea to maybe look at moving away from the MSIs and look more at maybe can I do it with NuGet, with Chocolaty, with these sorts of technologies.
Okay.
But we have all sorts of options. And obviously you can use tools like ProGet to provide internal NuGet and Chocolaty managed feeds, and these all start to play together and pull in and everything. It's that point, you're trying to create a sort of a network, a frame of all of these things to work with that can all pull together.
Okay.
So, yes, you were completely right though. I can fork this repository to give me things to start with, but to be honest, the bulk of it is knowing the format of that file, and it is well documented on blogs from the Dev Test Labs team as to how to create your own, how to add parameters to them if you need to, so they appear, so they're exposed into your ARM template, etc., etc., etc.
So as a team, I can get up and running quite quickly. Yeah. So, I mean, you're using VSTS there, which is the cloud service.
Yeah.
What if I don't have VSTS? What if I've got TFS on premise and I still want to use Dev Test Labs? Can I use the same add-ins on
TFS?
Yes,
you can. I've just flipped back to the Marketplace store, and something you'll notice if you look around the Marketplace, there's two buttons, and most extensions in here have two buttons. The install one will install into any VSTS instance that your account currently has access to. So if I hit install there, it'll give me a list of accounts I've got. I can pick one and say and install that extension. But if I'm on-prem, I just hit download.
Okay.
Download gives me a V6 file.
Yep.
That's all extensions are, is a V6 file. So that normally, in the case of build extensions, they're a big lump of PowerShell or Node and a manifest all zipped up together. Again, process is well documented on how to create those. I've got some blog posts on the workflow I use for creating build tasks, all done with storing everything in GitHub, but using VSTS to do my automated builds and automate all of my deployments, so it's all a seamless process. So as soon as I check in code, as long as it passes tests, it gets pushed straight out into the lab. Okay. But if I download that, I would just download the file, and then I go into the equivalent. If you're on premises, when you come in here, when you hit manage extensions, you get a slightly different dialogue. And it has an option that's a big button up there that says upload.
Okay.
And then you just, you point it at the V6 file, suck it in, and then the dialogues are exactly the same.
Right. I know there's PowerShell for Dev Test Lab. So if I'm not using VSTS or TFS, maybe I want to integrate with Octopus or Chef or anything that can run a task if I'm using...
exactly. So all these things are going to do is run a command in the end.
Yeah.
And again, these environments, these extensions are up on GitHub.
So I can download them.
Just go and find the Dev Test Lab task as opposed to the artifacts.
Yep.
Just search on GitHub, you'll find it. And then you can look at the line of PowerShell that's being run, and you can rewire that into your weapon of choice,
okay.
You know, from anything up from the command line upwards. So it is just an ARM template. It's just aiming to provide that nice little wrapper.
Okay.
Now, the one thing we did touch on towards the start was saying that this is for single machines.
Yeah.
And certainly, I know in conversations we've had before, this is a bit of a limitation for us, that a lot of the stuff we're developing involves a complex environment. You know, you'll probably want a domain controller, a SQL server, something running jobs, maybe a Linux box in there, so web front ends, clustering and all those sorts of things. And we need that for testing. And at the moment, DevTest Labs doesn't quite do that for us, because we've got big, complex ARM templates that are effectively nested templates. So we can pick up the template and say, create me one of these, and I go off for a long coffee, because it takes about an hour, but it will go and provision a complex network. It will spin up the virtual network. It will put a domain controller on it. It will configure the domain controller. Once that's up and stable, it will start dropping the other VMs on. Then it will use desired state configuration and script extensions to make that a SQL box. Do this, do that, insert these keys here. And I get to the end, I have this fully configured box up and running. It's a fully configured set of boxes up and running.
Yeah, and right now, DevTest Labs doesn't let me do that, does
no,
it?
I can't give it an ARM template that does more than provision a machine onto a network that already exists.
Yeah.
And that is currently a limitation. The product group have said it's on the way, that mm-hmm. sort of functionality. And I have to admit, I thought, oh, without that, it's useless. I can't use it for anything. But it's not the case. I've certainly, my first win, as I said before, my first quick win was not using up all my billing by switching my machines off.
No, I know a lot of MVPs like ourselves use it for that. I mean, the killer app for me in it actually is the reporting of the billing and the fact
yes.
that as obviously you and I as managers like to give our devs a certain amount of freedom, but they have to work within a budget. And,
yeah.
and being able to come into the lab and see how we're doing with that budget, that's the killer for me, because we can see what the project's doing in terms of its spend without needing access to the overall billing within the subscription or our enterprise portal or anything like that. And of course, it enables really easy chargeback if we're
yes.
passing this cost on
and
to an internal customer.
I had glossed over that too a little, that inside the admin console, I do actually get basic cost reporting.
Mm-hmm.
Cost to my labs, trend costs, those sorts of things. Obviously, there's a lab that I keep and it's switched off, so it's not costing me anything.
That's one
of the big advantages. And that works very nicely for us. So, yeah, there's definite, it's still very actively being developed. It's still a relatively young tool, but it certainly opens up loads of options. And if something you need to do is to provision out machines with something like desktop apps on them all the time for testing, it's great for that already. And you can wire that with a bit of care into a complex environment.
Okay.
So it's a very useful product.
So the bottom line, as we come up to the end of our session, if you're a lone gunman like ourselves who does a lot of demos, they're great for making sure you don't overspend. If you're a team, it's a great way of managing the budget and providing a nice, safe environment where you can have pre-canned machines and that kind of stuff. And if you're a team of teams, then you can wire in and start sharing, I'm assuming, the output of one team to then move into the related project that's been built by another team.
And that would be a case of being clever with the way you manage your artifact repositories.
Absolutely.
And it all wires into VSTS, so it's all part of your complete ALM DevOps story. It just makes an easy way to consume Azure resources from a developer's and tester's eye view without them having to delve too deeply into ARM templates.
That's fantastic. Well, thank you very much for coming and showing it to us and jabbering away on the couch with me. Don't go away, because after the break we have John Craddock, who is a recently minted MVP, as it turns out. I did not know that. And he's one of those people that if you're ever at a conference and you're looking for a good session, he's one of those safe pair of hands names that you know whatever he's going to be talking about is going to be interesting. I'm hoping, therefore, he's not going to let me down, and we should have a really, really interesting session on Azure Active Directory and identity in the cloud coming up in about 15 minutes. Richard, thank you very much for that.
Yes.
And I've just noticed that Claire is standing in my eyeline waving fiercely, which means I need to do 50 seconds on MVP program. If you know somebody who you think should be an MVP, if they work in the community, if you think they deserve to come and sit on the couch with me, like Richard, jabbering on here on the next Tech Days, then if you go to mvp.microsoft.com, you can nominate them. You could even nominate yourself. You've got the right to bear arms, the right to arm bears, whatever you want to do. Thank you very much for that. We will be back in a wee short while after this break.